Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And time now for our play-by-play call of the day.
Van Dumoulin able to hang it up to center. Here comes a 2-on-1. Going to change. Kessel to Malkin. Waiting. Shooting. Scoring! Evgeny Malkin threads the needle. And the Penguins have a 4-2 lead here in the third. Magical combination between Kessel and Malkin to deliver the goal.
Call by Mike Lang on the Penguins Radio Network as Gino Malkin scores his 30th goal of the season, beating Marc-Andre Fleury. It was an emotional return for Fleury last night to Pittsburgh. The Pens held on and beat Vegas 5-4 last night. The Pens have played very well in the last month. Ed Kratz now joins us from Philadelphia. Ed, well, this is maybe a conversation I'm not sure anybody in Philadelphia thought would ever have based on past history.
You're right. You're absolutely right about that. But we're having it. It's not a dream. It's really happening.
It's all. But you know what's really impressive, and what makes it magical, is I think a lot of people would have been very happy if the Eagles were 9-7 this year.
Yeah, I picked them 9-7. Are you kidding me? I thought maybe 10-6 if they got a few breaks, a couple lucky bounces of the ball. But other than that, yeah, 9-7 was my top end. And boy, I would really look smart after that pick.
Well, look, if you were to tell anybody before the season, you will lose Carson Wentz late, you'll lose Jason Peters. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. There are three or four of the critical guys they lost along the way. I mean, who could foresee this? Was there a point, though, early in the season where, Ed, you looked at it and you said, you know what, I think they've got something here. Maybe not a Super Bowl champion, but I think they got something here. What game would that have been?
Oh, goodness. Well, I'll tell you, I mean, if you think back to that 61-yard field goal that Jake Elliott made against the Giants, improbable kick, and you think, my goodness, how many times are you going to make a 61-yard field goal? I know it was very early in the season, but you think, well, you know, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe they can build on that. And sure enough, they just kept getting better and better week in. They went to Carolina and won a tough game on Monday night, or it was Thursday night, actually, football, down in Carolina. And that's kind of when I thought, you know what, this team could be something special. That was a good win against a good team that was playing well in their home stadium. But you know, I think that was the galvanizing game. But I think I had a little glimpse when Elliott made that 61-yarder from against the Giants.
Yeah, no question. I felt the same way, that when he made that kick against the Giants, because that game was lost. And
right.
Then they suddenly won it, and I thought, wow, that's huge for Philadelphia. All right, the Nick Foles story, it's a great story. But you and I both know that when they signed him in the offseason, it didn't take a football genius to say that's a great backup quarterback signing there. Right?
Yeah.
In the end, what did Doug Peterson do to make sure that elements of the offense fit Nick Foles once he knew Foles had to be the guy?
What Doug did was he went back and looked at every piece of tape that Nick Foles had in the NFL and broke it down. It meant working into the wee hours of the morning for Doug and his staff, but they did it. They looked at every single play, and they saw what Nick did well, and they saw what Nick did not do well. And one thing they saw he did well was that first year under Chip Kelly, when he threw those 27 touchdowns, the two interceptions, had that 7-touchdown game in Oakland against the Raiders. And they loved what they saw from those RPOs, those read pass options. And they started to integrate that more into the offense. If you look at the Super Bowl, close to 50% of Nick Foles' dropbacks came after that play-action RPO read. So they really incorporated a lot of that into the offense. And to tell you the truth, I think it kept teams really off balance, kept defenses off balance, Belichick is a master at adjusting. Him and Matt Patricia are very good at halftime adjustments, in-game adjustments, yet they could not solve what Foles and that RPO game was doing to them.
Which then brings us to the signature play of the game, and that's the one right before the end of the half. You know, everyone knows about Ernie Adams and what he does for Belichick. He breaks down every play of every game of every opponent over a couple, three-year period. Find something. Well, you and I both know that in the Eagles grouping, that play does not exist. They stole it. They stole it from the Bears. So explain the genesis of that and why they didn't use it against Minnesota but held it for the Patriots.
Well, you know, that's interesting. They did take it from the Bears, a 2016 game. Doug Peterson went to the podium today. There was an availability, and he said that. But, Steve, if you look against the Falcons, they used the play on an inside handoff to Nelson Aguilar that went for 21 yards, set up the Eagles' only touchdown of that game against Atlanta. That was a play that had never been used all year. Then you go to the Minnesota game, and you see that flea flicker that went for a touchdown. I can't remember the last time the Eagles threw a flea flicker. That was a new play. And then you come to this game where they're calling that play the Philly special. And, I mean, really, what can you say about it? It was just so dynamic and so completely unexpected to have Nick Foles just kind of wander off to the right side of the line. And the trick was, if you watch that video again, and you'll hear him yell, "Lane, Lane, Lane Johnson." It looks like he's changing the play. But that was the snap count. When he said his second lane, the ball was to be snapped right to Clement, who flipped it to Burton, who threw to a wide-open Nick Foles, and he's the only quarterback to catch a touchdown pass in the Super Bowl. So, you know, you can't really expect that to happen if you're the Patriots. Give the credit to Doug Peterson for having the guts to call that kind of play in that situation, because the ball's changing hands a couple times there. You know, a lot can go wrong, but it didn't. And if you talk to the players, they said, "We practiced that. Once the season ended, we began practicing, and it was very rough. It did not look good, but we kept getting better at it with each time we practiced it until we saw it in that key moment." So, you know, that to me was just that is probably one of the greatest plays in Super Bowl history, I think.
Oh, I think that call ranks with Sean Payton's onside kick.
against the Colts.
I think those are the two plays you sit back and go, "Whoa."
Yeah,
changed everything. Guts, and it changed everything. Also, because you can kind of see the Patriots' faces like, "What the heck? We're prepared for everything. Yeah. Where'd that come from?"
Right, right. Hey, but you know, Steve, another key fourth down play came on that winning touchdown drive. It was fourth and one at the 45-yard line with the clock down around 6 minutes or so, and the Eagles went for it. Peterson decided to go for it, where if you don't make it, and Frank Reich, the offensive coordinator, said after the game that if we don't make it there, the game's probably over. The Patriots get the ball in Eagles territory, probably score a touchdown. They go up by 8. But, again, the fearlessness of Peterson's play calling, the execution of Nick Foles in that offense, they converted the first and went, you know, finished the drive with a Zach Ertz 11-yard touchdown.
Well, it's interesting about the pass that Burton threw. Burton played quarterback against Penn State in the Outback Bowl.
I've actually
seen him and announced a game where he played quarterback.
That's great. That's terrific. But you never saw this day coming. You never saw him throwing a touchdown pass in the Super Bowl, I'll bet.
No. Absolutely not. Right. The city itself. You know, we saw how the city reacted when the Flyers won. We saw when they've reacted when the Sixers won. And, of course, most recently, the Phillies. But we all were interested as to how would the city react if this day ever arrived. How's the city reacted?
Well, I think everybody's happy. I got back late last night, so I haven't been too immersed in what is happening here. But I went down to the city today, and, you know, like I said, they had the locker room open. And but, you know, I just think the city's happy, basically. And tomorrow we're just going to see an outpouring of that love and that glee of a 58-year wait since their last championship. There's going to be several million people on hand. And I just think you're going to see a lot of love and a lot of support. And I hope there's not, you know, a few idiots that ruin it by doing something stupid. I know that there's been footage of, you know, some fires and things that were set in the aftermath of the win on Sunday. I think those fans are kind of the outliers, the kind that, you know, they would just like to destroy anything. I don't think that reflects on the millions of fans that really – were so overwhelmed by this victory. And, you know, I've seen people crying. I saw people at the stadium crying over the win, you know, and it makes people think of, you know, moments with a loved one that might not be here to share it. You know, a father like right. like myself, I thought of my father who you know, bled green, loved the Eagles, never saw them win a Super Bowl, passed away 2 years ago, or, you know, a grandfather maybe. So, you know, I just think there's so much love and so much good that happened from this victory, and I hope we see all of that good vent itself tomorrow at the parade.
Hope so as well, because I agree with you. It's they're the people that are doing the crazy stuff. They're always the outliers in any crowd.
All right? Right, yeah.
And it, you can do any celebration, you can find that. Okay?
Yeah.
Because you and I both know that's the way it is.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate, but you're right.
What's interesting is the Eagles, in terms of like players under contract and cap, are actually in pretty good shape. They have two quarterbacks that equal about $14 million. Most teams with star quarterbacks are in the 20 to 25 million range. How much of a role do you think that plays, especially with you're not sure if Wentz is ready on opening day, about Nick Foles' future in Philadelphia?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think Wentz being on his rookie contract, which, you know, it's sizable for a first-round pick, which it should be, but it's not as high as some of these other guys. You know, the Rodgers and the Bradys, you know, they consume a lot of the salary cap. So what the Eagles were able to do was kind of fortify some of these other positions by throwing money at it, like the backup spot. They're paying Nick Foles $11 million for this past season and the season coming up, which is a lot for a backup quarterback. But they're able to do these things because Wentz is on his rookie deal, and they took advantage of that by winning the Super Bowl. At some point, Wentz is going to be due a very hefty raise if he plays like he did this year and he can stay healthy. And then at that point, then you're going to have to skimp someplace else. But right now, what the Eagles are able to do at quarterback by putting $25 million into two quarterbacks, a lot of teams can't do that. $25 million goes into one quarterback, and then you kind of have to shortchange your backup quarterback. And we all saw the value of having an experienced quarterback like Nick Foles, who played a lot of football in the NFL before this little stretch of five games that he finished for the Eagles. So that was a real luxury that the Eagles had. They're not going to have that once Wentz comes due for his next contract.
Is there any interest now that Josh McDaniels is back down in Indianapolis of the Colts and Frank Reich?
Yeah, I was told that the Colts are going to seek permission to talk to Frank Reich. And, you know, Frank is a great guy. You know, I think the world of him off the field. But listen, I would love to see him get a head coaching shot. He's never had one. You know, he's been around Doug now for a couple years. You might say, well, he's never called a play, but, you know, Andy Reid never called a play when the Eagles hired him from the Packers as a quarterback's coach. Right. So, you know, I think Reich would be a terrific head coach, a great hire in Indianapolis. And if you're the Eagles, yeah, you're going to lose your offensive coordinator. You have a guy who's a quarterback's coach in John DeFilippo, who has been an offensive coordinator, that you could just plug right into that spot and then go look for another quarterback's coach. But, you know, as teams get successful, Steve, you know, you're going to lose coaches. You know, that's just the nature of the game. And, you know, the trick is finding good ones to replace them.
Ed, I mean, you want to take a look at the Penn State football coaching staff in 4 years?
Yes. Yes, you know firsthand how that is. Absolutely.
I mean, I've done a little bit in the last 2 years of, hi, I'm Steve Jones, and you are?
Handing out your cards to them, right?
And then you find out that they're great guys and they're great coaches, and okay, and you move on from there. There are a lot of
That's
good
right.
people out there. All right, so tomorrow, are you actually going to go to it? Is there an area you're designated to cover it? How does your day work tomorrow?
Well, I was telling Sean that the Eagles don't have a whole lot of experience at running parades.
Well, because we had Merrill Reese on the other day, and Merrill says, I think Mike and I are involved in it. He says,
yeah.
But they haven't told me yet.
Well, I just got an email about, I kid you not, about an hour ago with what the plans are. And there's going to be different shuttles. There's not going to be a flatbed truck like there was for the Phillies parade for the media. Which is unfortunate. That would have been really nice to ride the parade route and, you know, see up close and personal what it was about. But I just think there's too many media that cover the Eagles. They would probably need, you know, three flatbed trucks to fit you know, the number of media that would want to be on one. So there's not going to be that. There's going to be shuttle buses leaving from the team's headquarters in South Philly, the NovaCare complex, to different sites in the city, and then you're going to get dropped off, and then that's where you're going to have to stay camp for the entire day, and then you have to find your own way back from that site back to where you parked your car at the NovaCare complex. It's going to be, I don't know what it's going to be. It's going to be crazy. I went to that Phillies parade in 08. Boy, it was nuts. And they're calling for maybe a million more. I don't know where they're going to put them all, but it's going to be just bedlam. And I just, like we said earlier, just hope the fans behave themselves and this comes off as a big love fest, if you will.
Well, when you haven't done something since 1960...
Yeah.
When Dwight Eisenhower was president, you're waiting for President Kennedy.
Oh, yeah, right.
And now the Eagles will go down as the only franchise ever in a championship game to beat Vince Lombardi and Bill Belichick. It'll be the only one.
Wow. I didn't think of that. I was going to say the Giants, but then they didn't beat Lombardi.
No.
Yeah,
no, because
right.
Lombardi only lost one playoff game ever, is that championship game to the Eagles at Franklin Field.
Boy, that's great. I'm going to tweet that out, Steve. That's terrific. Yeah.
They're the only franchise to ever beat Bill Belichick and Vince Lombardi in a championship game.
I might even put that in my story tomorrow if you don't mind.
I mean, okay, I have to admit. I came up with that on my own. I thought about it after the game. I thought, wow, the only other one was against Lombardi. Geez, they're the only ones.
Yeah, that is really amazing. Yeah, two legendary NFL coaches, and the Eagles say, hey, we beat them both.
Yeah,
yeah.
How about that?
That's terrific.
Ed, and just enjoy it. Enjoy it. You've worked hard all year. Now you get to watch this and see people really happy about it. You get to enjoy it, too. You earned it because you do such great work.
Thanks so much, Steve. I appreciate that. And keep thinking of those little nuggets for me. If you have any more, feel free to send them my way.
Anytime, Ed. Anytime. That's my entire life. I'm all about nuggets.
Yeah. Well, that's my problem. It's too many chicken nuggets, really.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Hey, Ed, thanks so much. Appreciate the time very much.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Steve. Take care.
Ed Kratz. Oh, does he do great work. EaglesWire.com. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. And, of course, who was the voice behind this? Philadelphia's own John Facenda. I remember he came into Channel 3 one time. It was 1983. They had him narrate the 1982 National Championship film for Penn State. And Bob Bartolomeo was the guy that met him at the door, and all of a sudden I heard the background. Bob's like, "Hello, Mr. Facenda." "Hello, Bob. Pleasure to meet you." Oh, my God. Oh, it's John Facenda. It's really cool. "Hello, Bob." Oh, man. Yeah, that's... boy, what a moment. I mean, not only that, but, for example, you want to win any Super Bowl, but let's face it, it's got a little more... Don't you feel like it has a little more meat when it's the Patriots and not Jacksonville? Wow. I think that drives it home even more. And we'll see how the Patriots react to this. Interesting how Josh McDaniels stayed. And Josh McDaniels' agent, by the way, quit today. Furious with what he decided to do.
Makes you wonder if Josh made the call before calling back his agent. That's really interesting.
Who knows? But you know what? In the end, it's Josh McDaniels' call. And it's how he feels about it. It doesn't matter how his agent feels about it. His agent remember, the agent works for Josh McDaniels, not the other way around. Hey, Josh McDaniels, the employer. The agent can be mad all he wants, but he's the employee. And that, you know, we've tried, when it comes to Roger and the suit, we've tried to drive that point home to the suit as often as we can. Now, remember, Roger is the boss.
Yes. Just makes you wonder, when it was behind closed doors yesterday, what was said between McDaniels and Bob Kraft and Bill Belichick. And who knows how long Belichick's going to be at the helm, and Josh could be, McDaniels could be the heir apparent, or maybe he just took a look at his four kids and said, you know, I just don't want to uproot them. Let's just keep them where they're at.
He's got kids in school. Yeah. Look. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. All right? But before I got the Penn State football play-by-play job, I had other offers, and I elected to stay here because, in the end, I was hoping I would get this job. Right. So it wasn't like I didn't have offers to go other places. I did. And, look, I took a risk. I took a risk in staying. Sometimes it pays off. Maybe Josh McDaniels is taking a risk in staying. I don't know.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. One slice of news out of the James Franklin press conference today dealing with recruiting was he was asked about John Reed's status going into the spring, and he said John Reed will be full go. Not surprising, but that's good. All right, so let's get to it now. Ryan Snyder, one of the best in the business when it comes to recruiting and how he reports from Rivals.com and Blue White Illustrated, has always been very kind with his time and has given us a lot of time over the years. And on this late signing period day where Penn State did sign Rashid Walker, he joins us now. Ryan, welcome, and appreciate having you on.
Thanks, Steve. I appreciate it, buddy.
Yeah, no problem. Been down that road many times. All right. So they do end up getting Rashid Walker today. And I think that's about what I think people thought they would get. Tell us a little bit about what you know about the recruitment of Walker and what some of the swing factors happen to be.
Yeah, I would say this. Relationships, and just an overall comfortness with the staff. I mean, let's put it this way. I mean, Penn State has been on him for two straight years now, where Ohio State, don't get me wrong, they dabbled early and showed interest throughout, but they really didn't step it up until probably about the season. And that's what I really think made the difference here. I mean, Franklin has been on him from day one. I think his offer goes back not quite 2 years, but at least a year, year and a half. And they've just been consistent throughout. And it's not just Matt Limegrover either. Ricky Ronnie was always reaching out. When Moorhead was still here, he'd be reaching out. Franklin's reaching out. I mean, just to build that overall, comfortness with the staff, I think that's what made the big difference here. Now, Penn State's a little bit closer to home, and, they also have pretty good, academic standards. I know Mom really liked that. But for the most part, I think it's just the fact that they stayed on him harder than anyone. And when it really came down to crunch time, I think he understood that, this is where he was wanted more than any other place. Not saying Ohio State was playing with him, but they really wanted him at Penn State.
When you've watched him as a prospect, what have been your thoughts?
Most polished offensive lineman they've signed. That's the what comes to my mind at least immediately. I think Nick Asiato has a lot of potential, and same with the other two guys that they signed. But Walker is by far the most polished and ready to contribute. Now, you know, like all offensive linemen, I think a redshirt's probably likely, but who knows? I mean, we've seen in the past that not be the case. But for the most part, though, I you know, when it comes to his build, when it comes to his technique, and all the little things that you look for in a high school prospect, which by the way, you know, recruiting offensive linemen is without a doubt the hardest position. I think he really has. If it's not the complete package, you know, he's 80-90% there. So, we'll see how he progresses moving forward. But you know, if I had to pick somebody out of this group of offensive linemen to be there in the next year or two, Rasheed Walker would be the guy.
How important is it, based on their position, that Penn State, they signed one today, that they were judicious in what they did and didn't just say, okay, let's just fill out numbers here?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, look, let's be realistic. Anyone that really pays attention to this knows that Penn State's in a bit of a scholarship crunch right now. And, you know, we didn't see too many transfers out. I mean, personally, I thought we'd see a couple more than what we have. And not saying that still can't happen, but, you know, we didn't see too many guys leave. And, you know, when you look ahead to what they've done in 2019 and the relationships that they've developed with some elite players. I mean, you want to talk about great offensive linemen. They're in a heck of a spot with some elite offensive linemen for 2019. But really, across the board, I mean, they're in a great spot with probably a dozen or so four-star players right now, but if you look at the scholarship crunch that they're in, you know, I think it's going to be tough to reach 25. I mean, every year I think I say it's going to be tough to reach that max, and then they somehow do it. But if I had to project right now, it, you know, kind of feels like it's going to be close to the, you know, 20 or so. So, you know, by taking just one today, that, you know, that allows them to kind of, you know, maybe keep an extra scholarship or two for next year. And, you know, at the same time, you don't want to ever sign guys. I think they really liked a couple of players that they were looking down the stretch, you know, a couple of defensive backs that potentially fill in for, you know, Ashim Young, who, you know, didn't end up signing. But, you know, at the end of the day, they're in a great spot with a lot of 2019 guys. And, you know, they're not just going to take guys. They got to be 100% sold on them. And, you know, Walker was the guy they were absolutely always sold on.
Obviously, Jason Oway signed on letter of intent day, or in that 20th through 22nd period, but they kept the lid on it to allow him to make his announcement at the All-Star game. Mm-hmm. But when you think about the fact that after that day, Oway then officially told everyone what he had already done, and they get Walker today, is that about as productive as Penn State could be in the post-December 20th to 22nd period?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, and, you know, there were a couple other players that, you know, fans were hoping they would sign, or, you know, maybe adding someone, you know, down the stretch. But, you know, let's be realistic here. I mean, they basically signed two of their four main targets. Tyreek Smith ended up at Ohio State, and Solomon Enos ended up going to Utah. But you know, to get half of those two or half of those four, you know, to sign, and, you know, both the extremely important positions, especially Owe, they really need a defensive end. You know, I think that's what all fans should really hope for is to try and finish strong on a class that's already elite. So, you know, I think if you polled some fans, they'll pretend like they're bummed out about, you know, missing out on one or two other guys, but I think if you ask James Franklin, he's going to be ecstatic with the way they finished. And, you know, to add two solid players after the 21 guys that, you know, they signed back on December 20th, you know, I think if they're not top five, they're going to be like top six, right in that range. So, which is arguably the best class that Penn State's had, at least since, you know, some types like Rivals came out, you know, in 99, 2000 era. You know, I think that's all Penn State fans can ask for. This is a class that's we'll sit up there with the best.
Nationally, who did well today? I mean, who picked up those extra few here and there that, you know, I certainly made a difference, do you think, in their class based on prospects? Which schools did well today?
I mean, Georgia's killing it. Georgia is the school right now that everybody is talking about. They added a few prospects today. You know, I've been focused on Penn State for the most part, so I haven't ran through all the guys, but I know they picked up a few today, and, you know, Ohio State also added some guys today, and both of those two schools are sitting 1-2. You know, we're going to probably see a few more guys jump on board with Alabama, maybe Clemson, You know, so those two schools will move up, you know, throughout the day. But, you know, I think all of the talk, at least today, has been about Georgia. You know, they already had an elite class. I mean, they're sitting at 8 5-stars right now, Steve. 8 5-stars.
Right.
I mean, that is
right.
That's incredible. I mean, that really is – I mean, this is one of the best classes that I've ever seen. You know, on paper, of course, you know, half of those 5-stars are going to end up being busts, and that's just how it always is. But you know, when you look at paper, and that's what signing day is all about, you know, looking at what you signed on paper, this is really as good as it gets. So signing day, or excuse me, Georgia is all the talk right now for signing day. But, you know, the normal big hitters, you know, Ohio State's done well. Penn State, you know, grabbing extra players done well. So, you know, a lot of the teams you see up towards the top, they'll finish strong today.
Now that you've seen a full cycle of early and late signing in combination, how did it work?
Let's see. It depends on who you ask. I think if you ask James Franklin, he's very happy with everything. You know, he's locked up his class early, and it allowed him to really focus on, you know, two or three guys down the stretch. And that allowed him to really put some numbers into those visits as well. I mean, we were seeing a case where basically the entire offensive staff is going to visit Rashid Walker. So, and don't get me wrong, other schools are doing that as well. But if you ask some of the players that didn't sign in December 20th, 22nd, 20th, you know, that range, I think they would tell you it was very hectic. And maybe some of them wish they would have signed because, again, you know, when you – I don't know the exact numbers, but I would guess to say, you know, 60 to 70% of you know, the top 25 or so schools had their classes locked up. And, you know, when that's the case, that allows these other, you know, other top schools to really just commit their numbers, you know, on the players that haven't signed yet. And that becomes pretty hectic. You know, the last couple of weeks of the process have always been a very you know, hectic period for not just recruits but coaches as well. And now we're seeing, you know, because everybody's locked up, because there's a limited pool of, you know, elite prospects left, schools are devoting their entire staff, you know, to visits, which can become a lot of time. So, you know, again, I think it depends on who you ask. I personally really like the early signing period. I've said a million times, I think it's definitely here to stay, and I think it's definitely going to get moved up probably to August or something like that in a few years. Yeah. This is a trial run more than anything.
I've said for 30 years there should be an early signing period because I saw it worked in basketball. So it's
exactly.
I've said that for a long time and have never deviated from it. Now, the next part is, while the bow has been tied on this process, 19 and 20 are into high gear, and maybe for some people, 21. So let's get to the 19 part. What kind of head start has Penn State developed on the 19 class?
As well of a head start as anyone can ask for. I mean, put it this way. Penn State had two-thirds of their class locked up before the season, you know, and that's really allowed them to have so many top junior prospects, top sophomore prospects to get on campus for big games this season and, you know, even in the last summer, you know, get on campus for camp and whatnot. So they are in as good of a spot, you know, looking forward as any school could ask for. And to be honest, Penn State's been in this position for a few years now. I mean, it's not like this was the first time that they locked up, you know, I forget the exact number, but we'll say 15 or so recruits, somewhere in that range, you know, by the time they start their season. They've been doing this for a couple years now. And to stay in this pattern where, you know, you're locking up two-thirds of your class before, you know, before the crunch time comes in fall, you know, I think so many schools across the country would die to be in that pattern, you know, for 3, 4, 5 years in a row. So, you know, they've offered, I think it's well over 70 players now. And I would say out of those 70, you know, they're in an excellent spot with about 20 or so. And, you know, we're talking elite 4-star players, you know, top 250 guys. So we'll see moving forward. You know, they have 2 commitments right now. And of course, you know, official visits are going to start then in April and May and June. So, you know, we may see a few side, you know what, instead of making a visit for the spring game or whatever it may be, you know, let's hold off and take those official visits. So I could see maybe June being a little bit busier compared to years past. But, you know, when it comes to elite players and Penn State being in a great spot, you know, I have no doubt that 2019 will be a fantastic class.
And then what kind of start do they have on 20? I mean, I feel absurd
go all day.
Asking the question, but I also know it's a realistic question.
Steve, I interviewed a young man the other day. He's a freshman, just finished his freshman year in high school. And I've held off for so long trying to interview freshmen just because I don't feel comfortable really with it. And to be frank, I reached out to dad first. I refused to reach out to kids. But, you know, I just think that's the position we're in now. Penn State has now offered three 2021 players, and they've offered, I believe, it's right around 30 2020 prospects. So 2020 is, you know, just finished sophomore year, 2021 just finished freshman year. So, you know, we're looking at, 32 or so underclassmen offers that have already been handed out. And, you know, the 2020 number, that'll grow up to, you know, probably 40-plus, you know, by the time we end, camp and all that in the summertime. So, this is what this staff does. You know, they are very progressive, and I think if you ask some of the fan base, not too progressive because they want the staff to be elite, but they're just used to, you know, their old school ways of, you know, maybe not pursuing, you know, freshmen and sophomores in high school. But look, the proof is in the pudding. You know, it really is. They get on these guys early. They develop relationships that most schools can't really match. And then they maintain that for multiple years. And that's why you're continuously seeing elite prospects come to Penn State when it's all said and done.
Ryan, everyone grows in their job, and when they grow in their job, you know, they come up with better ways of doing things. For you in this job, what has it taken for you to get to this point where you really have a good approach as to how you approach it, why you approach it, how you approach it?
For me?
Yeah,
for
you.
My big thing, I know, let me think. My big thing I really changed with is parents. You know, as I've gotten older and I've gotten away from, you know, when I started, I was like 22. So I was still not recruit age, but young enough where, you know, I would try and talk to recruits all the time. And as I've gotten older, now I'm a dad myself, like I've really learned that parents are the key to everything, if that kind of makes sense. And then in going through mom and dad is your ticket to information, is your ticket to, you know, also not winning people over, but, building their trust and whatnot. So for me, I've really kind of progressed into becoming more of a, not a family guy, but, you know, going to dad, going to mom, and I think they really appreciate that as they grow throughout the process and realize how hectic it is. That's another thing for me is this is the recruiting scene is unlike anything out there, you know, when it comes to, it's a total free-for-all, you know, when it comes to bugging 17 and 18-year-old kids, and it's hectic, man. It is a lot for these guys. So, laying back and not bugging them for every little tiny thing, I think these guys really appreciate that. Now, some people on my board, for example, they may not like that all the time because they want little tiny pieces of information. But when you make it clear to these guys that, you know, hey, look, I'm not here to bug you all the time. I just need to know important things, and I need to, you know, just to work with me on little things, and I'll work with you on little things. And look, a lot of these kids, especially the ones that Penn State recruits, are really classy kids, and I really genuinely mean that. I'm not trying to, you know, kiss butt here or anything like that. But Penn State does recruit a really classy prospect for the most part compared to some other schools. And you know, I've been really fortunate to get to know those guys because for the most, they're really easy to work with, and they're mature beyond their years. And for that alone, I love it because it's it's giving me a ticket to get to know Saquon Barkley and Trace McSorley and a lot of guys before the rest of the fan base gets to know it. And it's a lot of fun.
Well, I mean, let's face it, in life, for the most part, not always, but for the most part, the parents can be the filter for a son or a daughter.
Yeah.
This allows them to be the filter in the process as to whether, hey, you know what, you should talk to this guy or not.
Exactly. And that's why for me, especially like the other day, you know, just talking to a freshman, I always just thought, start off with, look, I'll be very blunt with you. I'm not comfortable, talking to your 14-year-old son, your 15-year-old son. You know, this is, I don't think, and at the same time, I don't think these guys understand how hectic it's going to get, you know, because when they're at that age, they want to do interviews. I have so many young guys that always are like, yeah, you know, whatever you need, just, you know, text me or call me. And then 2.5 years later, they want nothing to do with it. You know, it's just,
right.
It's just an eye-opening experience for them. But you know, winning mom and dad's trust is that's everything to me now. And that's what I put all my effort into for the most part.
Absolute pleasure, Ryan. You do great, great work in an area where I do none.
I appreciate it, Steve. Thank you, buddy.
And I do none because I'm not allowed to do any. Because if I'm sitting, today was the first day I could even mention that they were recruiting Rasheed Walker. It's an NCAA violation if I do before they sign. So that's why I have to stay out of it. All right, we'll come back, wrap things up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. So you never heard that one before, huh?
That was a good one.
Because I said to the suit, you know, we were out playing golf, and I said, what law firm do you go to? And he says, Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe. I said, well,
LLC.
Does he scare you as much as he scares me? I mean, really.
Yeah, I'm numb to the fact since I've now worked with him since 95.
Hey, it's like, I took out a wedge and hit it. It's like, okay, let's just hit a wedge here.
That wasn't no cheddar.
No. Oh, but he's still in the building.
He's still in the building. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And he's also up to level 9 on Candy Crush. Oh, my goodness. Well, quite a day today. Rasheed Walker, that was, if you had to pick a guy they needed to get late to be your 23rd recruit, I thought he was the one that they needed to get, and they got him. All right. Now, we're going to find out, you know, over time how great a get that happens to be. You know how I approach these things. All right, now they're here. You feel really great about it. All right, now once the competition is comparable, there's a growth period that takes place. Some guys like Saquon Barkley step in, and the first day of practice, you walk away and you call your broadcast partner and say, wow, you've got to come see this. And there are some guys you look at and say, you know what, I think they're going to be pretty good, but it's going to take them a little bit. You know, well,
now you get to fire up the countdown. Now you get to fire up the countdown clock to spring ball.
So. Okay, now Mark Marinucci, okay, is making the trip from Williamsport in this weather. Mark, incredible. He's coming down. If Mark can make it, all the other ones, the students can make the trip across the street if Mark can make it from Williamsport. Way to go, Mark.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.